Scientists Exposed radio show, part of the Freedomizer Radio Network. Yes, we trust science. It's just scientists we don't trust. Visit madscientists.exposed for many ways to listen or call in our live number at 319-527-6208. That's 319-527-6208. Press 1 to participate on the air. Again, that number is 319-527-6208. And now, here's our lead investigator, Suzanne.
Hi, and welcome to another episode of Mad Scientists Exposed, and thank you for tuning in. And it's been a hard week on the censorship front as far as vaccine truth is concerned. I got word last night, and apparently it had happened a couple of days earlier, but our Monday morning Freedomizer radio host got censored by Etsy.com and had many of her products, her anti-vaccine or vaccine truth products, scrubbed from her shop on Etsy. And apparently that happened all over Etsy. People with T-shirts or whatever designs they had, you know, I don't know what designs they had, but there were a lot of them, she said. And it's just disgusting. So she's moved her shop over to something called Polly's Place. And Polly is the lady who rides on the vaxxed bus and interviews people who have vaccine-injured children who tell the story of how their children were perfectly healthy. Then they had a vaccine or a series of vaccines, and they lost mental functions, or they died, or they had some other horrible disease come on them, paralysis, eczema, all kinds of things. She interviews thousands of parents, and you can see this on Vaxxed TV on YouTube. Is a channel that it's not gone yet. I don't know. YouTube is lagging a little bit, but oh dear, my computer screen just went out. What happened? Well, I hope you can hear me. Well, I guess I'm on the phone, so you can hear me, but I'm not going to be able to read you the articles I had lined up into my screen. Okay, I'm going to change over to another computer in the room and talk a little bit. Anyway, so I was really, really upset that this kind of thing happens to people that I personally know. And okay, I have to switch over to the other user now on this other computer. This is the one where Ed August lists most of his books for edaugust.com. Let me see, that looks like me. Okay. What happened to my, I wonder if I can reboot that one. How odd. I apologize, people. That happened just like everything was working fine. Logged into Blog Talk Radio Studio and everything. This lady, Lynette Barron, she does the Monday morning Forsaken Generation show. And she's a really sweet lady, and she has two vaccine-injured children, and so she has a really hard life. And she and her husband have a little farm in Alabama called the Barron 10-acre farm. Barron is their last name, 10-acre farm. And and she makes herbal products, nutritional products, cosmetic products, you know, all health-based and things like that. And I don't know what she had. Well, she did have a product that was for like vaccine detoxing. Maybe that was the problem with Etsy. I don't know. It's possible that she's been targeted because she interviewed Paul Offit. And, a couple of weeks before she interviewed him, somebody tried to run her car off the road. And she was thinking it was an accident at the time, but it might not have been. Just really, really sad. Anyway, my computer died. I switched. Anyway, maybe Ed's going to reclaim his computer here. So I think I'm going to cut. I can't cut to a commercial break because I don't have the screen up yet. Okay. Well, sure, I'm here. I'm on the air. As soon as I got on the air, Blog Talk Radio died. And so I don't understand either. I mean, the screen died. I'm still on the phone. I don't know what that is. I hit the off button on the computer and forced it to reboot. So it just came up over there. Okay. Well, so I'm going to cut to commercial and switch back because the other computer has rebooted now. And I just had to bring up the studio screen again. Oh, what a shame. I had, you know, and I do have some articles lined up I want to read to you because there's some other nefarious stuff. There's actually science fraud articles, plagiarizing other science fraud articles. And it's pretty funny, all for the racism agenda, but that's a different agenda, and I'll finish.
You are listening to Freedomizer Radio.
The Etsy story when we come back.
Freedomize Radio.
Please learn more about Freedomizer Radio by going to freedomizerradio.com and also Facebook us right at freedomizerradio.com. Catch you there.
Did you know that every time you swipe your debit card, those behind-the-scenes transaction fees make the big banks even richer? In 2016 alone, these fees added up to $60 billion. Yes, that's billion with a B. Well, what if there was a way to have the convenience of a debit card, but reroute those fees from the banksters to organizations actually doing good in the world? Organizations that protect the environment or feed hungry children? What if your swipes could literally change the world? Well, Groundswell SPC has found a way to do just that. We've designed a Visa debit card program that shares transaction fees with your favorite cause. Groundswell partners with nonprofit organizations that promote the card to their supporters. Their supporters then use the card to power the mission of the nonprofit. It's a win-win-win for everyone, except the big banks, of course. Groundswell is about to launch its first cards into market, and we're inviting you to be part of this movement as an investor in the company. Go to wefunder.com/groundswellcard to learn more. Set up a free WeFunder account and invest in Groundswell today and get your money on mission.
Hello, everyone. I'd like to talk to you about our newest sponsor, Misty'sGardens.com. Now, this is a contraption where you can grow food in your apartment, in a small patio, or if you're like me and you absolutely suck at gardening, this makes life a lot easier. It is a vertical tower garden. We can grow over 20 things at once in a small, compacted area. Good health starts with good habits like eating wholesome foods, and with tower gardens, you can easily grow your own fresh, nutrient-rich food virtually anywhere year-round without soil. So Misty'sGardens.com, have a look at it, check it out, buy it, plant, and like it. Misty'sGardens.com.
Imagine standing barefoot on cushy grass while you use a professional-grade knife to deftly chop fresh vegetables on your organic bamboo cutting board. The team at MyZestiness.com wants to help your family enjoy home cooking like this more often. They do this by offering fun and functional tools that make your time in the kitchen more efficient and enjoyable. MyZestiness.com offers the finest and most inter-world-class customer service team. Check out their ever-expanding inventory today. Visit MyZestiness.com. That's zesty like spicy, nest like home. MyZestiness.com.
Okay, so my computer is still taking forever to come back up. I don't know what the problem is. So rather than changing users over on its computer, he's just going to bring up the studio again. I could run the second commercial break, but that would really bore you. Okay. Logging in. Okay. I'll have a race between the two computers, see which one comes up first. This is really... And as soon as I get on the air, it all collapses. And so almost makes me wonder. Almost makes me wonder. Anyway, so you don't have to worry about finding Lynette Barron's products. Come to freedomizerradio.com. I've changed all the links in her products. You know, she's got a little slideshows of her little balms and lotions and things, BALMS, and link to her new location. With at Polly's Place, and that's called the Autism Center of Austin, which actually Austin is the same city where Alex Jones is. So I sent them a news tip, which is kind of hard to do. Their email usually bounces. But, you know, this is a lady that might be worth interviewing. But also Etsy needs to be called out because they've joined the bandwagon of all these big tech companies that are playing political games and medical games with your life because they don't want you hearing the truth. They don't want you even questioning. You're not supposed to even question. And a science that you can't question is a religion. You're not supposed to even question the vaccine dogma that's going on. You're supposed to just lay out your money and stick out your arms and your children's arms. And it's really pathetic. Anyway, so I'm getting back to my articles that I can read you. I think I'm, you know, this computer is only about 2 years old, maybe not even a year and a half. And I'm thinking I need to just wipe Windows off it and just put Ubuntu on it. I'm so sick of this. I mean, some days it's lickety split and fast and everything. And other days it's just something is really, really wrong. It's like trying to look at the world through a keyhole and a swamp. And Anyway, so Oren Schwoyer, and I had to laugh about it because I don't think Oren Schwoyer of InfoWars was even aware of what he said this morning. Yeah, he put out an article. It says, something about the racism and things like that. Science proving that calling, actually called, let me read you the title, bring it up another page, but a science calling air pollution racist. And, oh, that's not it. Come on, scroll down, scroll down, scroll down. It's terrible when your computer crashes. How can it not be there? Air pollution is racist. How can it's got to be there? I know, they shuffle their articles around. Anyway, the title was something about USA Today calls air pollution racist. And he says, seriously, click the link below. It's just as ridiculous as you would think. The air is racist. So then you click over to USA Today. It says, study finds a race gap in air pollution. Whites largely cause it. Blacks and Hispanics breathe it. Now, if that doesn't sound like agenda-driven tobacco science, I don't know what is. Because it's really ridiculous. They don't even discuss which populations might smoke more. And I think it's about even between all of them. The only people that I've known that have died suddenly, and there have been several, were heavy smokers. Anyway, the air that Americans breathe isn't equal. And this is dated today, yesterday. This is dated yesterday, March 11th. The air that Americans breathe isn't equal. Blacks and Hispanics disproportionately breathe air that's been polluted by non-Hispanic whites, according to a study. And he links over to the PNAS.org. Which is Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences of the United States of America. The Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences. Okay, this new research quantifies for the first time the racial gap between who causes air pollution and who breathes it. Pollution is disproportionately caused by whites, it says, but disproportionately inhaled by Black and Hispanic minorities. No mention of anybody else who might be living in America. So these are not the only three races here. Poor air quality remains the largest environmental health risk in the United States, the study warns. In fact, with 100,000 deaths per year, more Americans die from air pollution than air crashes and murders combined. And they finally give me a name of who they're quoting. Even though minorities are contributing less to the overall problem of air pollution, they are affected by it more, said study co-author Jason Hill, an engineering professor at the University of Minnesota, who is white. Is it fair that I create more pollution and somebody else is disproportionately affected by it? What a stupid question. If you're living on the earth, you're a human being, and you're participating in particularly if you're in the United States, you're not creating as much air pollution as the Chinese are, but there's no mention of China and its air pollution and how it drifts, west around the world. Hill said that while the air in the U.S. has gotten cleaner in the past decades, pollution inequity has remained stubbornly high. What is especially surprising is just how large pollution inequity is and has been for well over a decade, Hill said. They have pictures of some spewing smokestacks. The type of pollution analyzed in the study is known as PM2.5, tiny grains of particulate matter that are especially dangerous to human health because they can get deep into our lungs. Those particles at 2.5 micrometers, far smaller than the width of a human hair, are produced by car tailpipes, power plant smokestacks, and burning materials. Now, I have a problem with that sentence. Car tailpipes don't create pollution. It's the engines that exhaust themselves through the tailpipes that create the pollutions. And that's that might seem silly to you, but it's a logical flaw. Because my car is parked in the carport right now, it is not putting out air pollution. The inner tailpipe by itself is not putting out air pollution. And I don't know how stupid USA Today thinks we are. It would take me putting the key in the engine and turning it on and causing the internal combustion engine to start burning the gasoline that then exhausts through the tailpipe. The tailpipe is nothing but a pipe. It doesn't make anything. If it did, if pipes made things, you could just hook up the pipe to your house, you know, the plumbing to your house, and you'd have instant water. No, you got to pay your water bill and have the water company pump it to your house. You know, pipes don't make things in and of themselves. And it's the same for power plant smokestacks. When the power plant isn't running, there's no smoke. It's the plant that makes the smoke and the materials that they're burning inside the plant that makes the smoke. And the smokestack is just an avenue of exiting the smoke from the plant. And so it makes a big deal to me, that kind of a difference, and how stupid they must think we are. Anyway, the study found that Black and Hispanic Americans, now they don't capitalize Black, but they do capitalize Hispanic Americans, bear a pollution burden, quote-unquote. Blacks are exposed to about 56% more pollution than is caused by their consumption. For Hispanics, it is slightly higher, 63%. However, non-Hispanic whites, whatever that means, because I always thought Hispanics were white, I don't know, experience a pollution advantage, quote unquote, meaning they breathe about 70% less air pollution than whites cause. Well, you know, not all whites cause the same amount of pollution. There are some people with some pretty heavy duty cars out there driving Hummers around or whatever, and my little putt-putt, you know, or my son's little hybrid car produces almost no air pollution, and he gets all over the country whenever he's got enough vacation time to do so. You can't just make megalithic statements like this. The formula scientists use in their study is driven by disparities in the amount of goods and services that groups consume. Everything's all groupified, no individual allowances made here. And in the exposure to the resulting pollution. On average, whites tend to consume more than minorities. It's because of wealth, he said. That's assuming whites have more money than minorities, and they don't. Right? Absolutely, they don't. For example, you know, just look at, you know, coal miners and, you know, people in the lower. They can't prove this statement at all. They can't. For example, the scientists found that whites spend more money on pollution-intensive goods and services than do blacks and Hispanics. I want to know who they asked, which means they generate more pollution than the other groups do. They have this FACO chart here of faces of different shades and these up and down blue arrows that are actually too small to read. I apologize. Anyway, someone had to make the pen you bought at the store. I thought all pens were made in China. And said co-author Julian Marshall, an engineering professor at the University of Washington, we wanted to look at where the pollution associated with making that pen is located. Is it close to where people live and who lives there? For this study, the category non-Hispanic whites also includes Asian Americans. Oh! And Native Americans. So they lumped us all together. They lumped three races together and said that we're being unfair to these two other races. This is based on the source that the researchers used, government data on personal expenditures from the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics. Other experts agreed with the research. These findings confirm what most grassroots environmental justice leaders have known for decades. Whites are dumping their pollution on poor people and poor people of color. Wow, what an outrageous lie. said Texas Southern University public affairs professor Robert Ballard, who was not part of the research. Ballard, often called the father of environmental justice, is African American. Oh, because there's no such thing as, what is it? What do you call it? Environmental justice. There's the environment and there's justice, but environmental justice implies that the environment is the victim. And yes, we all want a clean environment and we all work toward it. And to start pointing fingers is always counterproductive because it's not true. Researchers say their pollution inequity formula could be used on other types of environmental burdens. The approach we're going to bash the one race here. The approach we established in this study could be extended to other pollutants, locations, and groupings of people, Marshall said. When it comes to determining who causes air pollution and who breathes that pollution, this research is just the beginning. The study was published Monday in the peer-reviewed journal Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences, and I've linked over to that study. But what I want to show you is this other article that Owen Troyer gives us, and I think he linked to it without really analyzing what he was linking to. This is Mother Jones. This is April of 2014. This article is 5 years old. It says, "This is how racist your air is." This is Mother Jones. "If you're white, you're probably breathing cleaner air. We don't all breathe the same air. People of color are exposed to 46% more nitrogen dioxide pollution each year than white folks." They say white people. "If people of color were exposed to the same nitrogen dioxide levels as whites, then each year, 7,000 fewer people of color would die of coronary heart disease pop-up. The same effect would be achieved if 3 million Americans never took up smoking, 16 million inactive Americans took up regular exercise." That's only looking at the impact of one pollutant on one disease. So this goes on. Now, this is April of 2014, this article is. And much of the article reads a lot like the first article, but with more scientific-sounding words. But it's essentially the same article. It just reeks of plagiarism to me. So earlier this month, environmental scientists at the University of Minnesota came out with a startling nationwide study. And this first one linked to. Where did the first one link to? Come on, give me the study. I'm trying to find which state the more recent study came out of. Okay, well, they do cite the guy at Minnesota. Let's see. Okay, so both of these studies came out of Minnesota, so they're copying off each other, but they actually have different dates on them and different author names. Okay, so this one, the older study is at PLOS1 journals. And what does that stand for? They don't just put it in the logo here. Published with PLOS1, accelerating the publication of peer-reviewed science. For one's PNAS, the other's PLOS. And of course, I'm feeding sand through a keyhole again. Well, I'll go back to reading the thing while the definition loads. National patterns of environmental injustice and inequality, outdoor nitrous oxide air pollution in the United States. I'll read you the abstract real quick. We describe spatial patterns and environmental injustice and inequality for residential outdoor nitrogen dioxide, NO2, concentrations in the contiguous United States. Our approach employs census demographic data and a recently published high-resolution data set of outdoor nitrous oxide concentrations. Nationally, population-weighted mean nitrous oxide concentrations are 4.6 parts per billion, 38%. P is less than 0.01, higher for non-whites than for whites. The environmental health implications of that concentration disparity are compelling. For example, we estimate that reducing non-whites NO nitrous oxide concentrations to the levels experienced by whites would reduce ischemic heart disease mortality by 7,000 deaths per year, which is equivalent to 16 million people increasing. Okay, that's what we just read in the other study. Anyway, let me scroll down the study here. Overall, no nitrous oxide levels and the disparity levels between races varied widely by city. You can see the complete breakdown here, and they've got a link to the University of Minnesota. And most unequal cities when it comes to nitrous oxide, the dirtiest dozen, Long Beach, California, and Santa Ana, New York City and Newark, New Jersey, Riverside and San Bernardino, California, San Jose, California, Salt Lake City, Utah, Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, Denver, Aurora, Colorado, Chicago, Illinois, San Francisco, and Oakland, California, Trenton, New Jersey, Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, and Detroit, Michigan. The most unjust dozen. Okay. I guess those are not the same list. One's the dirtiest dozen, and the other is the most unjust dozen. Brunswick, California, Rochester, New York. How can they possibly measure Rochester, New York? It's right across some water from Canada. You know where this is coming from? Worcester, Massachusetts, Worcester, however you pronounce it, Chattanooga, Tennessee. This is the most unjust dozen. Birmingham, Alabama, Springfield, Massachusetts, Danbury, Connecticut. I thought that was like just trees and houses there. Bridgeport, Stamford, Connecticut, Providence, Rhode Island, Mobile, Alabama, Durham, North Carolina, and Macon, Georgia. Julian Marshall, the co-author of the study, speculated that the racial disparity came largely from patterns of where people live. Americans in urban areas often cluster by race. These wired maps show that quite clearly, and they have a link off, and as the evidence shows, those neighborhoods where people of color live are more likely to have higher nitrous oxide levels. Last year, a study from the Centers for Disease Control, they hadn't added the P yet, came to a similar conclusion, finding that more than 5 million people of color live within 150 meters of a major U.S. highway. That's because they put interstates through downtown cities. Measuring the public health implications of the massive gap in pollution exposure is a tricky business, though, as so many different factors play a role in the development of any given disease. You're darn right. But what scientists can do is look at something called, quote-unquote, relative risk of a given pollutant, which essentially tells you how much your risk of developing a certain disease increases as you're exposed to more of that pollutant. The Minnesota team, this is the 2014 Minnesota team, not the 2019 Minnesota team, use nitrous oxide relative risk as it relates to heart disease to come to the conclusion in the chart above. 7,000 fewer people of color would die of heart disease each year if they were exposed to the same nitrous oxide levels as white folks. And while that statistic is striking, it's only the tip of the iceberg. Thousands of fewer people of color would experience asthma, lung disease, and preterm births if they had the same exposure levels to nitrous oxide as white people do. So I guess the answer here is to increase the nitrous oxide exposure of people, assuming that this study is actually true. The preterm births, if they had the same exposure level to nitrous oxide as white people do. Okay, if you apply the same hypothetical to other pollutants like ozone and particulate matter, the numbers would grow even bigger, and that's what they did in 2019. So where is the pollution coming from? In urban areas, where air pollution levels are usually highest, the biggest culprit is transportation. Here's a breakdown of how much pollution, including nitrous oxide, but also ozone, particulate matter, and carbon monoxide. Different vehicle types emit in the year, and they have a passenger car, 260 pounds, an SUV, 451 pounds, a bus, 859 pounds, and you know, is it getting into ridiculousness? This kind of stuff, it's almost like as much as the car weighs. it's nonsense. Delivery truck, 1,235 pounds. A semi, 1,837 pounds. Marshall said that his team focused on nitrous oxide in cities because it contributes to the formation of two other pollutants, ozone and particulate matter, and it's seen as a proxy for other pollutants that come from combustion. In other words, the results are likely lots of other pollutants. So they're not claiming that tailpipes make pollution, and they're not claiming that smokestacks make pollution. They're just claiming all your cars do. So you're supposed to all get bicycles, I guess. And this is like essentially the same study repeated over. And the 2019 people are essentially plagiarizing from the 2014 people, and all to set the agenda that you're racist for breathing. You exhale carbon dioxide too, and they're redefining carbon dioxide as a pollutant, and you're racist for exhaling. So, I mean, that's taking it far. That's what they really wanted to say, you know, but how dare you get in a car and do your grocery shopping, you know? It's just pretty disgusting. Anyway, I just thought that was pretty funny that they're pawning this off as new stuff, and they're just remassaging in actually more obnoxious terms the study from 2014, and it's just pretty bad. Anyway, let's see if that page came up to tell me what the meaning of PLOS is. PLOS is a nonprofit publisher, innovator, and advocacy organization. Advocacy. So advocacy is the purpose of their study, printed in an advocacy, quote-unquote, study. And then these people at PNAS picked up on it and remassaged it. I still can't find out what PLOS stands for. They have papers under biology, medicine, computational biology, whatever that is, genetics, pathogens, ONE, whatever that is, neglected tropical diseases, collections, currents, and blogs network. I still can't find out what PLOS stands for. Isn't that interesting? Here's an about page. Let's see what that says. I thought I was on the about page. Maybe not. Maybe I am, but it's not going anywhere. Who we are, why open access, innovation, preprints, get involved, donate, FAQ. Who we are. Let's see if they'll tell us here. PLOS was founded as a nonprofit open access publisher, innovator, and advocacy organization, advocacy, with a mission to advance progress in science and medicine. Both of these are agenda driven. They're admitting it right here. By leading a transformation in research communication, we believe that open is a mindset that represents the best scientific values, blah, 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 wah, wah, wah. Still no definition of the acronym. That's bizarre. No definition. Okay, our history. Founded in 2001 as an alternative to the growing constraints of traditional scientific publishing, meaning that we like to bend the rules. This isn't really, this is cooked science is what we've got because we have advocacy to do. Founded in 2001 as an alternative to the growing constraints of traditional scientific publishing, the Public Library of Science, PLOS, rapidly evolved into a driving force in the open access movement. Public Library of Science. So founders circulate the open letter. The PLOS Open Access Initiative began in 2000 when an open letter was circulated by founders Harold Varmus and Patrick Brown and Michael Eisen. Reflecting the author's roots within the academic community, the letter urged scientific and medical publishers to make published research available for distribution through free online public archives, such as the U.S. National Library of Medicine, PubMed Central, which I guess I've heard they've totally reorganized that. Nearly 30, because too many of us unwashed masses were accessing science. Nearly 34,000 scientists from 180 nations signed, committing to only publish and edit and review for and personally subscribe to only those scholarly and scientific journals that have agreed to grant unrestricted free distribution rights to any and all original research reports. Okay. Well, in one way, that's all right, but the growing constraints of, are they trying to say that they weren't publishing enough or they were publishing too much? Okay, let's see what they have to say about vaccine. What do they have to say about vaccine? Not a single. Oh, there it is. Vaccination confidence and parental refusal, delay of early childhood vaccines. Darn right. Imperfect vaccine aggravates the long-standing dilemma of voluntary vaccination. Yeah. the relationship between influenza vaccination habits and the location of vaccination. Influenza vaccination guidelines and vaccine sales in Southeast Asia from 2008 to 2011, maintaining vaccine delivery following the introduction of rotavirus and pneumococcal vaccines in Thailand. Well, I don't know. I don't like them using the term advocacy in their definition. That really kind of makes me sick. They're advocating, promoting racism as if we can't all solve problems together as Americans. It's just kind of funny. Let's see what we can find. Some more science articles. Loading, loading, loading. Keep those pages loading. Why do some load so much faster than others? I haven't figured that out. Now, these two, I think, are coming from the same server because they're both Mike Adams sites, and he's always got some good stuff on there. Science.news. Cranberries can reduce gingival inflammation. Okay, roasted walnuts can reduce risk of colon cancer. Game theory can significantly improve human-robot interaction, say researchers. Learned how to play the game better, I guess. Scientists develop a self-cleaning spacesuit that can get rid of hyper-abrasive space dust. Understand why omega-3s are good for your heart. They protect against DNA damage in the cells that line your blood vessels. I thought they also kept them lubricated. Does cosmic rain explain climate change? Cosmic rays rain down, quote-unquote, through the atmosphere, influencing the weather. She's not quite right. This is Rita Winters writing for one of Mike Adams' websites. And we know what's doing it. All the magnetic storms out there and the cosmic rays direct a lot of energy into the poles of the Earth, which heats up the core and drives the volcanism, the earthquakes, and the warming of the oceans, and that drives the weather. Of course, I don't even want to click on this. It just, because I don't like the title. What's UHVDC, the future of power? That's what, okay, that sounds interesting. Is this going to be one of those Tesla wireless energy things? UHVDC, loading, loading, loading. Keep those pages loading. Here it is. And this is dated today by Edsel Cook. In the coming days, the electricity in China and other emerging countries will be delivered by ultra-high voltage direct current. Oh, my gosh. That's so dangerous. This is why we have alternating current. It's because it's less dangerous. This modern take on an ancestral form of power transmission can deliver incredible amounts of electricity from one end of the massive country to another without losing any of it. Don't you need transformers and boosters? The rapidly increasing Chinese middle class consumes 8% more electricity with each passing year. That's huge. Fortunately, the country's hydroelectric plants produce more than enough power to meet these needs. Unfortunately, most of the Chinese population is concentrated in urban areas on the coastlines. The power plants, on the other hand, are located much further inland. Trying to solve this problem of distance by updating an old proposal for transmitting power over large distances. In 2010, it made history as the first country to take up UHVDC. Related, Denmark claims pole position in race to maximize wind power. Out with AC power transmission and in with ultra-high voltage DC systems. That's so terrifying. The current world standard when it comes to power transmission is alternating current, AC. It was selected for the greater ease of converting the very high voltage required by power lines down to the far lower voltages required by households hooked up to the power grid. Excuse me. AC got its name because of the direction of its current oscillating, okay? That is to say, alternates. It alternates back and forth as it travels. This oscillation uses up a lot of power, twice that of AC's competitor back in the days of Thomas Edison. During the 19th century, Edison championed direct current as a means of transporting electricity over considerable distances. UHVDC is a successor to his proposal. Siemens and ABB Group assisted China in setting up its first UHVDC system. Spanning nearly 1,242 miles, it connects Zhangjiebe Dam in Sichuan Province and the city of Shanghai. The Zhangjiebe carrying 6.4 gigawatts, its transformer can handle up to 10 gigawatts, enough power for almost 20 million homes, and its power lines support twice the voltage of AC counterparts. More VDC systems are being prepared. China has just received the world's first 1,100-kilowatt transformer. Designed by Siemens, the new transformer can handle 13 gigawatts, the same output as 10 nuclear power plants. China's new they keep transposing their letters, and it's just bugging me. Let's see. Lost my place. China's new UHVDC system is lighter on the budget and friendlier to the environment. Oh, is it? In addition to carrying larger loads of electricity with far less wastage, UHVDC power transmission systems are also less expensive and more eco-friendly than AC equivalents. Are they, though? The DC systems achieve this by needing less materials for certain parts. An AC system usually uses half a dozen wires for conducting electricity. In comparison, a DC system only needs three slightly bigger wires. So the power lines of a UHVDC system will use up less aluminum than AC lines. They need that aluminum for injecting into your babies. Furthermore, a wire that contains fewer materials will also weigh less. The transmission towers that support UHVDC power lines do not need to be massive. They can be built using less steel and other materials, and they will also take up less room on the ground. When the benefits of increased efficiency, reduced amount of raw materials, and compact physical footprint are calculated together, UHVDC power transmission systems can be much cheaper than AC systems. In addition to China, India has also adopted UHVDC, albeit on a much more modest scale. Brazil is also considering switching from AC to DC, given the country's hydroelectric plants being located in the north while its major cities are in the southeast. In the United States, there was a plan for high-voltage DC system, wind farms in Oklahoma to customers in Tennessee. The power lines would have passed through Arkansas, though, and that state opposed the project, which... So that's the whole story. I wish to go into more about the technicalities. There was an interesting TruthStream Media video on how they happened to be driving through Texas, and they spotted what looked like the old Tesla experimental tower that never fully got built on Long Island of transmitting wireless electricity. And when his bank backers figured out that there wasn't going to be a way to meter electricity and that everybody would just have free electricity, they all pulled out. You have to have that. So this UHVDC stuff, this is kind of interesting because eventually we are going to leapfrog over it because people are reviving the Tesla wireless electricity. There are some theories that maybe this is what the pyramids were about. There's other theories that the pyramids were about pumping water into the atmosphere to change their climate temporarily because they were facing desertification to keep their crops going. But there's a lot of theories as to what the pyramids are about. They knew a lot more than got passed down to us. So anyway, let's find what else is interesting. There's a lot of interesting stuff here. Why the vaccine industry refuses to conduct clinical trials using a genuine placebo control group. And that's true. And that's what the lawsuit with ICANN.org against the HHS, because they never actually did safety studies that involved a true placebo group. this one explains it here a little more concisely than what I've been reading over at the other place. Why the vaccine industry refuses clinical trials using a genuine placebo control group. And this is published today, Ethan Huff at naturalnews.com. The next time someone tries to tell you that the science is quote-unquote settled on vaccine safety and effectiveness, you might want to bring up the fact that the at least not one that the establishment has ever conducted or referenced in support of government vaccination programs that's ever compared a CDC-approved vaccine to an actual inert placebo. Instead, the vaccine industry tests its vaccines against controls, quote-unquote, that contain all of the same chemicals and ingredients as the vaccines themselves, minus the viral and or bacterial components that function as these vaccines' active ingredients. So they're not admitting that any of this other stuff could be dangerous. They're only testing two nearly identical vaccines against each other. As the Association of American Physicians and Surgeons, AAPS, revealed in a recent statement on federal vaccine mandates, and we should read that first because that just came out, official vaccine studies basically compared toxic injections to other toxic injections, which is how they're able to come to a false conclusion of safe and effective. Two dangerous things, apparently two dangerous things equate to a safe thing. Furthermore, these same studies failed to compare the outcomes of vaccinated versus unvaccinated, the excuse being that it would be quote-unquote unethical and immoral to deprive some children of quote-unquote life-saving vaccines. For more vaccine-related news, be sure to check out vaccines.news. Real vaccine science doesn't exist, explains the AAPS. That's the American Association of Physicians and Surgeons. That's pretty big if these people are coming out with a statement on it. So how safe are vaccines really? According to the AAPS, we really can't say because there have been no rigorous safety studies of sufficient power to rule out a much higher risk of complications for vaccines. In other words, real-life safety studies on vaccines doesn't exist. Studies, plural, don't exist. Despite the mainstream sentiment that all vaccines have been fully vetted for safety and effectiveness, such studies would require an adequate number of subjects, a long duration, years, not days, an unvaccinated control group. The placebo must be truly inactive, such as a saline, not the adjuvant or everything but the intended antigen, and consideration of all adverse health events, including neurodevelopmental disorders. So that, you know, if they only like watch you for a couple of days to assure that you don't die of anaphylactic shock and then dismiss all the future ailments that will ripen over time because you've just dismissed all the time in the future, you know, this is how they're faking the whole thing. The AAPS admits in no uncertain terms. Well, they didn't do it. In consideration of all adverse health events, the AAPS admits in no uncertain terms. What's basically going on with vaccine science is vaccine companies are cheating by comparing a given vaccine to another vaccine rather than to a true saline-based placebo. Vaccine studies are also designed to compare vaccinated people to other vaccinated people rather than to a true control group of unvaccinated people. The end result is that big pharma and big vaccine get the results they desire, basically the scientific illusion propagated to the masses that all vaccines are 100% safe and effective all the time. This is their way of hiding the true effects of the toxic ingredients in vaccines, says Mike Adams, the health ranger. They refuse to use saline solutions as the placebo because then these toxic effects of the adjuvants would be obvious in the experiment group. Vaccines are necessarily risky, says AAPS, hence the need for kangaroo vaccine courts to pay out damages. The federal government is fully aware of this vaccine fraud, which is why it set up the Vaccine Injury Compensation Program, VCIP, a no-fault system that shields the vaccine industry from all liability while quietly paying off those who have been injured or killed by vaccines. Manufacturers are virtually immune from product liability, so the incentive to develop safer products is much diminished, says the AAPS. Manufacturers may even refuse to – and they, I'm sure these doctors were not allowed to testify at last week's congressional hearing on vaccine mandates. Manufacturers may even refuse to make available a product believed to be safer, such as monovalent measles vaccine, in preference to the triple-valent MMR, measles, mumps, rubella. Consumer refusal is the only incentive to do better. but be sure to read the full statement on federal vaccine mandates from the AAPS at this link. Well, let's see how much we can read without repeating ourselves. Statement on federal vaccine mandates. This is at aapsonline.org, Association of American Physicians and Surgeons. This is big. This is really big. 2, Oversight and Investigation Subcommittee, House Energy and Commerce Committee. I guess this is in lieu of testimony, huh? They submitted a letter. Let's see. Senate Committee on Health, Education, and Labor and Pensions. RE Statement Federal Vaccine Mandates, dated February 26, 2019. The Association of American Physicians and Surgeons, AAPS, strongly opposes federal interference in medical decisions, including mandated vaccines. After being fully informed of the risks and benefits of a medical procedure, patients have the right to reject or accept the procedure. The regulation of medical practice is a state function, not a federal one. Governmental, and so why is the FDA in the middle of everything? Why? Governmental preemption of patients' or parents' decisions about accepting drugs or other medical interventions is a serious intrusion into individual liberty, autonomy, and parental decisions about child rearing. A public health threat is the rationale for the policy on mandatory vaccines. But how much of a threat is required to justify forcing people to accept government-imposed risks? Regulators may intervene to protect the public against a one in a million risk of a threat, such as a cancer. I have to zoom this page. How much of a threat is required to justify forcing people to accept government-imposed risks? Regulators may intervene to protect the public against a one in a million risk of a threat, such as cancer, for whom an involuntary exposure to a toxin, or one in 100,000 risk from a voluntary, e.g., occupational exposure. I'm not sure what that sentence says. What is the risk of death, cancer, or crippling complication from a vaccine? There are no rigorous safety studies of sufficient power to rule out a much higher risk of complications, even one in 10,000 for vaccines. Such studies would require an adequate number of subjects, a long duration, years, not days, an unvaccinated control group, a placebo must be truly inactive, such as saline, not the adjuvant or everything but the intended antigen. And wow, that's amazing. They're using the same lingo. And consideration of all adverse health events, including neurodevelopmental disorders. That would include autism. Vaccines are necessarily risky, as recognized by the U.S. Supreme Court and by Congress. The Vaccine Injury Compensation Program has paid out some $4 billion in damages, high hurdles must be surmounted to collect compensation. The damage may be so devastating that most people would prefer restored function to a multi-million dollar damage award. Sure, you'd rather... You'd rather your brain-damaged kid have his brain back than take the money. Absolutely. If that's what happened to your kid. Now, my kids all got skin conditions, some more severe than others. I was lucky. Of course, raising them wasn't easy. It just wasn't easy. Attitudes and intelligence, you know, but raising kids isn't easy, and, you know, everything worthwhile. It's definitely worthwhile. Anyway, the damage may be so devastating that most people prefer restored function to a multi-million dollar damage award. The smallpox vaccine is so dangerous that you can't get it now, despite the weaponization of smallpox. Wow. They're speaking to Congress, the American Association of Physicians and Surgeons, speaking to Congress as if this is common knowledge that smallpox has been weaponized. Rabies vaccine is given only after a suspected exposure or to high-risk persons such as veterinarians. The whole-cell pertussis vaccine was withdrawn from the U.S. market a decade later than from the Japanese market because of reports of severe permanent brain damage. Yeah, the DTaP causes brain swelling. That's the whole. So now we have the partial cell. The acellular vaccine that replaced it is evidently safer, though somewhat less effective. Yeah, people keep getting whooping cough all over the place, but it's still killing babies too. The risk benefit ratio varies with the frequency and severity of the disease, vaccine safety, and individual patient factors. These must be evaluated by patient and physician, not imposed by a government agency. Measles is the much publicized threat used to push for mandates and is probably the worst threat among the vaccine preventable illnesses because it is so highly contagious. There are occasional outbreaks, generally starting with an infected individual coming from somewhere outside the U.S. Don't know if that's true. The majority, but by no means all the people who catch the measles have not been vaccinated. No, that's not necessarily true either. Almost all make a full recovery with robust lifelong immunity. The last measles death in the U.S. occurred in 2015, according to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. Are potential measles complications, including death in persons who cannot be vaccinated due to immune deficiency, a justification for revoking the rights of all Americans and establishing a precedent for still greater restrictions on our rights to give or withhold consent to medical interventions? Clearly not. Only one person in years and years and years, and more people have died of the MMR than have died of the disease itself. Anyway, there was an interesting side note. You know, they talk about, oh, well, measles comes from somebody who brings it into the country that maybe they wasn't vaccinated. They just carry it in. They give it to other people. Jerome Corsi, he used to work for Alex Jones. He's an author. He wrote Where's the Birth Certificate? He's a long time investigative journalist, and he's really, really good. I think he and Alex Jones parted way over Q because Jerome Corsi wanted to cover Q, and Alex Jones doesn't give Q a whole lot of credence. I've caught Q in lies myself, knowing lies, and so I don't follow Q, although some of the stuff he says is, you know, pretty clever. It's some kind of parlor game, I think, this QAnon stuff is. They all, like, scratch each other's brains. Anyway, Jerome Corsi on Facebook yesterday made a statement, oh, these measles outbreaks, you know, they're coming from all these illegal immigrants coming in, and we're having to quarantine. There was a news story about us having to quarantine like 2,000 people that all had measles and mumps, you know, coming into the U.S. Why would they all get measles and mumps at the same time? You know, anyway, his argument was about building the wall. And he only had a couple dozen responses at the time, so I hope he saw what I said. I responded to him. I said, you might consider that we're giving them the mumps and measles by injecting them as soon as they get here, because that's what we do with legal immigrants. You can't move to the U.S. unless you get yourself the hell vaccinated up. Can't move here. And there, you know, there have been court cases. I don't know how they turned out, of young girls wanting to move to the U.S. with their families, and they're being blocked because they're not getting the HPV vaccine. HPV, which you have to make a conscious lifestyle choice to contract, you have to choose to be promiscuous and not be monogamous and not, you know, anyway, you have to, or you have to, that's really the only way to get it. And so why they're requiring it for school children, it makes me wonder what's going on in the classrooms, you know, because the only way to get it is multiple sex partners. Anyway, so I said to him, you know, you might consider that we're giving them the measles and mumps by injecting them with the vaccine as soon as they get here, because that's what we do. I said, according to, and I gave him the link to the MMR vaccine package insert that described as known adverse reactions, all the same symptoms as measles and all the same symptoms as mumps, including the swelling neck and jowls. And, but they just give it other fancy names. They name the symptoms rather than name the disease, because they can't admit they're actually giving the people the disease with these injections. So I don't know if he answered me or not. I haven't been on Facebook today because I am so sick of all the censorship going on, you know. And that, you know, same with Etsy's getting on the bandwagon now. It just really, really makes me sick, and I don't want to participate. And I have to, because some people, you lose connect. You know, when you jump from social media to social media to social media, you're not all jumping at the same time. And so you got to get in there once in a while and check your message box. But the whole system makes me ill on Facebook. Anyway, let's go on. So to give or withhold consent to medical interventions, clearly not. Many serious complications have followed MMR vaccination and are listed in the manufacturer's package insert. Though a causal relationship may not have been proved, According to a 2012 report by the Cochrane Collaboration, the design and reporting of safety outcomes in MMR vaccine studies, both pre- and post-marketing, are largely inadequate, cited by the National Vaccine Information Center. Mandate advocates often assert a need for 95% immunization rate to achieve herd immunity, as if we're cattle. However, Mary Holland and Chase Zachary of New York University School of Law argue in the Oregon Law Review that because complete herd immunity and measles eradication are unachievable, the better goal is for herd effect and disease control. The best outcome would result, they argue, from informed consent, more open communication, and market-based approaches. Market-based approaches might include nutrition, vitamin A, and I believe vitamin C too, but especially vitamin A is supposedly really effective in cutting measles short. So what do you need a vaccine for? You can just cut it short with proper nutrition. Even disregarding adverse vaccine events, the results of near universal vaccination have not been completely positive. Measles, when it does occur, is 4 to 5 times worse than in pre-vaccination times, according to a Lancet Infectious Diseases. Wow, they link over to another study. Because of the changed age distribution, more adults whose vaccine-based immunity waned and more infants who no longer receive passive immunity from their naturally immune mother to protect them during their most vulnerable period. That's the same for chickenpox and shingles. Younger people are getting shingles. It used to be an old person's disease. Older people are getting chickenpox. It used to be a childhood disease. Measles is a vexing problem, and more complete forced vaccination will likely not solve it. Better public health measures, earlier detection, contact tracing, and isolation, a more effective, safer vaccine, or an effective treatment are all needed, like vitamin A, eh? Meanwhile, those who choose not to vaccinate now might do so in an outbreak, or they can be isolated. Immunosuppressed patients might choose isolation in any event, because vaccinated people can also possibly transmit measles, even if not sick themselves. And that's proof, too. And this has been submitted to the Committee in Congress, but, we don't hear about it. They want to talk about mandates. Issues that Congress might consider. Manufacturers are virtually immune from product liability, so the incentive to develop safer products is much diminished. Manufacturers may even refuse to make available a product believed to be safer, such as monovalent measles vaccine, in preference to MMR, measles, mumps, rubella. Consumer refusal is the only incentive to do better. There are enormous, there's so much fraud going on in the vaccine industry. They will never get me to take another vaccine as long as I live. Never, ever, ever. Just too much fraud. I don't trust any of them. You know, they cannot repair the mistrust that they have caused with this whole thing. Thank you, Ed. There are enormous conflicts of interest involving lucrative relationships with vaccine purveyors. Research into possible vaccine adverse effects is being quashed, as is dissent by professionals. There are many theoretical mechanisms for adverse effects from vaccines, especially in children with developing brains and immune systems. Note the devastating effects of Zika or rubella virus on developing humans, even though adults may have mild or asymptomatic infections. Many vaccines contain live viruses intended to cause a mild infection. Children's brains are developing rapidly. Any interference with the complex development symphony could be ruinous. There's a lot of people claiming that the DTaP was causing the microcephaly in Brazil, or that the Zika vaccine itself is causing it. Vaccines are neither 100% safe nor 100% effective, nor are they the only available means to control the spread of disease. Plumbing has a lot to do with it, doesn't it? Washing your hands. AAPS believes that liberty rights are unalienable. Patients and parents have the right to refuse vaccination, although potentially contagious persons can be restricted in their movements, e.g., as with Ebola. We didn't succeed in restricting that nurse who was walking all over with Ebola symptoms. Two, one got on a plane and one got in a car and drove across state lines. As needed to protect others against a clear and present danger, unvaccinated persons with no exposure to a disease and no evidence of a disease are not a clear or present danger. AAPS represents thousands of physicians in all specialties nationwide. It was founded in 1943 to protect private medicine and the patient-physician relationship. Respectfully yours, Jane M. Orient, MD, Executive Director, Association of American Physicians and Surgeons. So I really, really want to thank these people for reaching out to Congress with these statements and these links to the science and the very well-thought-out scientific progression of thought here. I really want to thank them for participating in this. And I'm going to take another quick commercial break, and we'll be back. Let's see. Oops. Lost my screen. Bring my screen back up. Keep doing that.
Are you looking for a new place to shop, eat, and save? Are you sick of paying full price? Would you like to save money at the places you enjoy most? Well, here's a popular savings book that is full of coupons catered to your local area. It's called Save Around. This book is full of exclusive discounts to help you save money around your town. Yes, that's Save Around. You will save money at restaurants, department stores, cars, even flowers. When I take my family out, there are seven of us. The average meal was about $110 to $140. Last time I took them out, and I'm holding a copy of the receipt right here, the check originally was $120. With the Save Around book, our meal cost $82 at a place we go to quite often. Who knew? And there are a few places we found that we are going to check out. View the books in your area before you buy. Go to freedomizerradio.com or barefootislegal.org. Just click on your city, and within a few days, you will be saving money around town with your new Save Around book.
How would you like to make your work more enjoyable, be more creative and relaxed, all while sitting at your desk? That's exactly what my Serenity Rug has done for me. This revolutionary footrest, I can't even call it a footrest, because this thing encourages movement of your feet, which results in more blood flow. While traditional footrests advocate the motionless placement of your feet, I found that I'm unconsciously digging my feet into the long, soft grass strands of the Serenity Rug. It delivers an incredibly relaxing sensation that closely resembles the feeling of an exotic foot massage. If you have ever had a foot massage that made you want to stay there for hours, you know what I'm talking about. If you have not heard about the Serenity Rug, check them out at serenityrug.com and join the exclusive Serenity Rug community and enjoy a feeling of comfort and relaxation that most will never experience. They've sold out before, so I suggest you do your feet a favor and grab one of these. Again, that's serenityrug.com.
Do you want to live a happy and healthy barefoot lifestyle? Join Barefoot is Legal Saturdays, 1:30 p.m. Eastern, 10:30 a.m. Pacific Time to learn your rights to live a barefoot lifestyle. There are no laws against bare feet in public, and we are here to dispel the myths and empower you to stand up for your rights. Join full-time barefooter and victims legal advocate Nick Pierce on Freedomizer Radio or the Barefoot is Legal radio show Saturdays, 1:30 p.m. Eastern, 10:30 a.m. Pacific, and check out barefootislegal.org.
You are listening to Freedomizer Radio, where freedomizers freedomize freedom.
Hi, I had another article here, and I lost it. I don't know. It's one of those days, I guess. It's a dark, rainy day here in Arizona, which used to be a rare thing, but now happens all the time. It's that moving into the Ice Age thing. So let's find something interesting here. Okay, that's the Mexican Industry and Placebo thing. Girl Scouts now celebrating young girls who push abortion, oblivious to the fact that half of all abortions are baby girls. Yeah, that's been going on. It's around the time I quit the Girl Scouts and I was, you know, around, well, a little bit before Roe v. Wade. Yeah, they were, some PACs or troops, I should say, were introducing badges for taking tours of abortion clinics in those states where it was legal. Let's see. I know what it was. It was the CDC here. Democrats pushing CDC to fake gun violence science research, just like the EPA fakes climate change research. This is the NationalSentinel.com, and this is published today in Democrats Executive Branch. Okay, they don't have the author's name. They just have the tags. Oh, by J.D. Hayes. One of the reasons why leftist Democrats love big government is because they can use it to give themselves, their party, and importantly, their agenda an air of legitimacy. That's why majority House Democrats are pushing for more funding for gun violence research, and they're looking to a familiar ally to provide it, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, which has a history of producing politically correct science on the subject of guns specifically. They will never touch Big Pharma's involvement in school shootings, anything like that, in actually causing school shootings. Pop up. If they manage to push additional funding, as the Hill reported last week, Democrats are attempting to claim that gun violence has become a public health emergency, quote-unquote, despite FBI and government statistics to the contrary, and all while they work to thwart the President Donald Trump's declaration of a real national emergency along the U.S.-Mexico border, just like Barack Obama said it was in 2014, and they link off to that. If they managed to push additional funding through the GOP-controlled Senate to a presidential signature, it would mark the first time in two decades that Congress ponied up tax money for gun violence research. Funding fell off after lawmakers passed the amendments in the 1990s discouraging federal agencies from conducting gun-related research. We should not be afraid of research, said, but now we know that research is always agendified, said Representative Rosa DeLauro. We should not be afraid of research, said Rosa DeLauro, Democrat of Connecticut, chair of the House Appropriations Committee's Subcommittee on Health. Gun violence is a public health emergency. Now, I guess in Chicago it is, huh? The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, and they show you the acronym CDC without the P, is the nation's foremost public health agency, and yet it has been absent from this research agenda for more than 20 years. The GOP is arguing that because gun violence isn't a disease. The GOP is arguing that funding gun violence research is a Democrat political stunt aimed at producing, quote-unquote, evidence that it's an emergency, quote-unquote. The money we spend needs to make a difference as opposed to making a political point, countered Representative Tom Cole, Republican of Oklahoma, the subcommittee's ranking member. The Hill noted further, an amendment passed in 1996 named for former Representative Jay Dickey, Republican of Arkansas, prevented the use of federal funds to advocate for gun control. But Democrats and public health experts argue it also created a chilling effect on agencies studying the causes of gun violence and how to prevent it. Democrats, as always Democrats, have pushed in recent years to restore funding for gun violence research, complaining that Republicans have blocked their efforts. But the GOP has countered that federal agencies are not barred from conducting gun-related research, just from advocating for gun control, which, of course, is what Democrats want the CDC to do so they can push for a national gun violence emergency, quote-unquote. The fact is no such emergency exists. Yes, there is gun violence in America, but it's not an emergency. In fact, violent crime rates fell for the second year in a row last year, and gun crimes are not all on the rise. Despite a huge increase in the number of guns sold and the number of gun-owning Americans, what's more, today's violent crime rate is about half of what it was at its peak in 1991. That's interesting, isn't it? Today's violent crime rate is about half of what it was at its peak in 1991, despite Hollywood shoving these increasingly violent movies down our throats, glorifying violence. You know, Liam Neeson every gun he's in, he's shooting at people. Every movie he's in, he's shooting at people, but he condemns American American gun culture, quote unquote. And he's the guy now that they're going after for calling him a racist because he said he had a friend, 20, 30 years ago who was raped by a man of another race. And he went storming through the streets looking to kill any man of that race. But he eventually got the better of himself and calmed himself down. And he made the mistake now of admitting that recently in public. So I'm not a big fan of Liam Neeson. I've used to watch his movies and enjoyed his performances, but he's a guy with an anti-American bent, and I'm just fed up with that. Him and Johnny Depp. Him and Johnny Depp. Anyway, so let me go on here, which means the Democrats are pushing. Okay, so there is no since the crime rate, the violent crime rate, is about half of what it was in 1991. There is no gun violence emergency, quote unquote, which means that the Democrats are pushing for the CDC to push tainted research, quote unquote, on the issue so they can use it to argue for more gun control. There's nothing complicated about this. Democrats use federal agencies, tainted or rigged research all the time to push their agenda forward. And an even great example is the way in which they have managed to coerce federal agencies with funding to produce bogus climate change, quote unquote, research, blaming human activity. And we know that's all fake. It all comes from what's going on in the solar system and the magnetic storms and solar cycles. The GOP's Cole said using federal tax dollars to essentially tell a federal agency what they should be researching isn't sound science or policymaking. Well, you know, the government has a legitimate role in the safety of the population. But they're also tainted. They're taking a lot of bribe money from pharmaceuticals. And we know that every single school shooting in the last couple of decades has involved kids on legally prescribed psychiatric drugs. You know, you get on them, they make you more violent. Or if you get off them, you ricochet into violence. If you download the package insert of every single antidepressant on the market, every single one of them lists violent tendencies as one of the known adverse reactions. So, of course, this is going to trigger into this phenomenon. They've not managed to push their gun control, and so we haven't seen a gun shooting in a few months. And I better knock wood, or I'll jinx the whole thing. Because we're all onto it now. Every time there is a big shooting, people jump all over the article saying, well, what drugs were they on? We know it's Big Pharma. And so the agenda isn't flying and they know it. And now even if they shut off the comment sections, you can go in with Gab Dissenter and say the same thing. So they will have a good read on what Americans are thinking when they try to push these agendas. We're just not buying it. Anyway, the article goes on with a quote. There's some danger here. We're pretty careful about trying to let researchers decide what areas of research make sense, he said. If you've got some legitimate ideas, go out there and do it. We're not trying to stop you from researching. We just won't fund it if it looks like you're going after fraud. Anyway, these are interesting headlines. Let's see. Let me pull up this load of headlines. Scientists understand why omega-3s are good for your heart. Okay, they protect against DNA damage. Well, we should read those. Protect against DNA damage. This is dated today by Rita Winters on science.news, which is one of the Mike Adams websites. And he puts out a lot of good science. It's just hard to pull it all together because he scatters it over multiple websites because he knows the next step, once they fail to shut everybody down in Twitter and Facebook and YouTube and Etsy, they're going to come after domain names. Hillary Clinton essentially made that campaign promise in near the end of the election in 2016. That was why Obama had cast off control of the domain name dictionary called ICANN. I think that was two N's, separate from the Del Bigtree stuff, but so that we couldn't have recourse. Anyway, heart and arterial diseases plague the planet. especially with people's lifestyle habits today. Many medical experts recommend foods rich in omega-3 fatty acids to help the cardiovascular system, but they never explained why they're good for you. Fortunately, researchers found that omega-3 fatty acids have chemical components that protect heart cells from death by free radicals. Wow. Eicosapentaenoic acid, EPA, and another big long name, DHA, components found in omega-3 fatty acids promote antioxidant responses in the human aortic endothelial cells, protecting DNA from oxidative stress from reactive oxygen species, ROS. Both EPA and DHA prevent cardiovascular disease, but how they do remains unclear. Researchers note that EPA and DHA reduced intracellular reactive oxygen species and increased antioxidant molecules. They concluded that omega-3 fatty acids are beneficial to the cardiovascular system and help prevent its diseases. So they have a study they linked to, published in November of 2017 in the Public Library. Oh, there's the PLOS again, huh? Public Library of Science, the people with the agenda. That's kind of too bad. I hope they also link to other journals. Given the information above, you would definitely want to know which foods have high omega-3 fatty acids. Here's a list of such foods: mackerel, salmon, cod liver oil, herring, oysters, sardines, anchovies, caviar, flax seeds. Yeah, flax seeds are pretty good. Chia seeds, walnuts, soybeans. Now, they're saying that caviar actually has higher omega-3s than chia seeds. I'm not going to go to the store and buy caviar. I'm not going to do it. I mean, it's not like I'm opposed to seafood, but I'm opposed to spending big bucks, and I just don't want to eat fish eggs. It just kind of strikes me as gross. But on the list here, caviar and chia seeds are by far the highest in omega-3s. And, in a day I forget to eat my chia seeds. This is a day my knees hurt. So I don't forget to eat my chia seeds. Oh, and there's also some vegetables. There's some eggs, meats, grass-fed animals, dairy products, hemp seeds, spinach, Brussels sprouts, and purslane. Purslane is often called a weed, but it's actually like a little winter lettuce that you can grow in your container gardens. Anyway, I think that's about going to wrap it up here. I just had a big laugh about that air pollution is racist thing. I don't buy it at all because there are wide variations on how individuals live their lives, and Americans are just Americans, and I'm not going to buy this bill of goods. You can download all the package inserts on antidepressants and see their relationship to violence. It doesn't take the CDC to do that. I mean, you can download them right from the government's websites. And with that, I hope you all have a great week, and we'll talk to you next Tuesday.